All right, it's a couple minutes after the hour, so I think we're going to get started with the next session. So, hi everyone, my name is Juniper Campbell. I'm the product owner for trip planning and transit data at Arcadis. We implement OpenTrip Planner and do OTP feature development for between 10 to 15 agencies around North America. I've worked on OTP in various capacities since 2016, and I'm based in Portland, Oregon, in the US. For my talk today, I'm going to be talking about kind of how we've been adapting approaches to routing for accessibility using a couple case studies from North America, one that we've worked on directly and one that's a partner project in the same grant program that takes a slightly different approach, and then open things up for discussion at the end because I'm curious to know how your organizations are approaching accessibility. So first up, how exactly do we define accessibility in OTP to begin with? So far, at least in the US, it's generally just focused on wheelchair accessibility. It's a single checkbox within the app saying, do you want to route prioritizing wheelchair accessible routes or not? That is largely driven by, at least in the US, the Americans with Disabilities Act, that has specific requirements on what defines an accessible bus or an accessible bus or train or bus stop or rail station. And those are things that can be modeled in GTFS and then OTP. So our data sources for this within the GTFS trips file, that tells us is the vehicle that's serving that trip wheelchair accessible or not. And in the GTFS stops file is wheelchair boarding possible at a given location, and that just refers to the actual stop itself, not can you get to that stop via an accessible route. That then for access and egress portions, we supplement that with the tags from OpenStreetMap. So are the edges and nodes as part of the access and egress graph accessible to wheelchair users when planning the trip? There are a number of fields that OTP looks at to make that determination. And in general, they're just applying cost penalties. So it's not a hard constraint. If the only way to get to a stop is via a route that's not accessible, we'll still show that user that particular route. So what's wrong with that approach? It really only considers accessibility for wheelchair users. And beyond that, it assumes that all wheelchair users have the same needs and priorities while traveling. So in the screenshot, on the slide here is an example from our OTP implementation in the Seattle area. We're able to confirm, based on this one particular definition, is the transit portion of the trip accessible, and is the access and egress legs of that trip accessible, but it's only by that one very specific definition of accessibility. So that gets complicated when we try to expand how we define accessibility. You know, how do you decide when you're traveling whether a given sidewalk or path is accessible to you? How steep is it? What is the surface made of? Is it paved? Is it asphalt? Is it dirt? And how well maintained or rough is that? Are these things issues for you? Are they barriers that would prevent you from taking that trip at all? Or are they things that might make that trip annoying, but you can live with it and still get to your bus stop or to your train station and complete the trip? So the projects that I'm going to showcase today are looking at ways to answer these questions or better model those considerations within OTP to give a little bit more nuanced look at routing for accessibility. So first up, the Georgia Mobility and Accessibility Planner. This is a project that we've been working on for the last 4 years with the Georgia Department of Transportation and the Atlanta Regional Commission in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's a trip planning platform focused on car-free routing in suburban and rural Atlanta. It also provides in-trip support and integration with other systems so that folks can get assistance and help with their trip along the way based on their mobility assistance needs. And then it also is prioritizing support for blind and low vision travelers, as well as folks in the community with limited English proficiency. And all of that information is available both as a web app and iOS and Android mobile apps. The goal of this project was the idea of the complete trip and how can an OTP-based app support users throughout that complete trip process. So all the way from pre-trip planning, ensuring that user is given a route that best meets their mobility and accessibility needs, and then supporting them through the trip. So giving them turn-by-turn directions to get from their origin to the transit portion of the trip, and providing them alerts and updates along the way, making the transition to transit. Giving an automatic notice to the bus driver that someone is waiting at that stop and may need a little extra time or assistance to board the vehicle. It interfaces and integrates with pedestrian signal systems so that an extended pedestrian signal is requested for users at stops along their route. And then it broadcasts that information out to connected vehicles. So a lot of these things just happen in the background to the actual user of the app. They just get the notifications and updates in their system. But all those integrations kind of help give them the support that they need along the portion of the trip. So today we'll just be talking about routing, but it's part of this broader package of integrations and technology to help support their trip along the way. So to address accessibility within the GMAT platform, we developed the mobility profile within our OTP app. And so when a user signs up and is creating their account, they're asked a couple of questions that define their mobility profile. So the first question is whether they use a mobility assistive device, anything from a manual walker or cane, to a mobility scooter, a traditional or manual wheelchair, or an electric wheelchair. And then two follow-up questions asking if that user has any mobility limitations that would cause them to move a little more slowly or more carefully than other people, and then asking if they have any vision limitations, so if they're blind or low vision. So then those three factors, whether the person uses an assistance device, whether they've self-identified as moving a little bit more slowly or carefully, and if they have any vision limitations, get combined to form these 18 different mobility profiles. And those different mobility profiles will then be used to route them as part of their trip planning process. So in the back end, within our OTP implementation for this app, we define different impedance values or time cost penalty factors for each of those 18 mobility profiles for all of the edges and nodes within the OSM graph for use in OTP routing. And that's kind of our attempt to model all those different consideration factors that members of that mobility profile would use if they were taking a trip themselves. It can also be thought of kind of the additional time or effort that that user would be willing to walk or roll to take a safer path rather than taking the riskier or path that requires more exertion. So some examples here that breaks down into kind of the within that OSM network for all of the edges. Impedance factors here would be things that impact the travel time for the length of that segment for that particular mobility profile. So things like the slope of a sidewalk. Someone using an electric wheelchair is going to be impacted by slope much differently than someone who's using a manual wheelchair or just walking, as well as surface defects. Is there a cross slope? Is there roughness to the surface? Are there potholes? Other things like that. And then factors for impacting impedance at nodes would be things like the presence or absence of pedestrian ramps or curb cuts, as well as the vehicle curb cuts for things like driveways or industrial access that can also be used for kind of informally navigating on and off the sidewalk. So we calculate impedance values or time cost penalty factors for each of the mobility profile. And then the combined profiles will use the largest impedance value based on their individual factors for that particular segment. So if someone both uses a manual wheelchair and is low vision, between the two of those, the higher impedance or cost factor would be used for that particular segment. So an example of this from the test area in suburban Georgia, planning a walking trip between two administrative buildings. The trip plan on the left is using a mobility profile for a user who does not use any mobility assistance device. It routes them on a path, kind of on an access sidewalk across the parking lot, and then through a roundabout to connect to another sidewalk. If you update that mobility profile and have that user assigned to, or as someone who uses a manual wheelchair, it's going to detour them down to the south, and then back up the sidewalk to the roundabout to avoid a staircase. So in that particular case, there's a staircase leading up to the sidewalk, connecting between the parking lot and the sidewalk at the roundabout. So that's that. The high impedance value on that staircase for folks using certain mobility devices is what leads that that detour route that takes more time but is easier for that particular user. So some trade-offs here. This mobility profile-based approach allows for more nuanced routing and trip plans based on a traveler's needs and preferences, and it considers a much wider range of accessibility needs beyond just a single on-off toggle for wheelchair routing. But it does still come with challenges. So the main issue here is we're still making assumptions about what someone needs if they or in what their needs or preferences are based on the mobility assistance device that they use. It requires a lot of data collection and management, so all of those factors that would impact the impedance costs take a lot of time to collect initially, and then also to maintain that data set so that it's up to date with changing conditions. And then finally, the current approach for this app requires integration with an external system. So we're partnering with a group at the Georgia Institute of Technology. They have a model for developing the actual impedance cost factors, which we then consume via a data feed into our OTP routing engine for use at the time of trip planning. So then to contrast that with an example from another project. So both the Georgia Mobility and Accessibility Planner and this second project, the Access Map, are funded by a U.S. Department of Transportation grant called ITS for U.S., focused on using intelligent transportation solutions for folks who were previously left out of technology or data projects. So this example is from the Seattle area. It's called Access Map. It was developed by the University of Washington, and it is focused on similar factors and user groups as the Georgia Mobility and Accessibility Planner. It takes a slightly different approach, and again is focused on the Seattle, Washington area, because both of these projects are really data collection intensive. At the moment, they have kind of a limited study area that has the full kind of range of input data required. The main thing that makes the Access Map project a little bit different is, in addition to users being able to select predefined profiles that are based on what mobility assistance device they use, they're able to see what the individual routing factors that are assigned to that profile is. So if you select a wheelchair profile, it'll tell you based on that profile, we're going to say here's the maximum or minimum slope that you're interested in considering. We think that you want to avoid things like intersections that don't have pedestrian ramps or curb cuts. But then users are also able to customize their settings or preferences, either based on one of the default settings or just beginning from scratch. So it gives users a little bit more control to actually make sure that the preferences used to plan their routes best actually reflect their travel needs. So just an example here, planning a trip from downtown Seattle to one of the adjacent neighborhoods, using that the profile defined on the last page is going to avoid sidewalk segments that are over a certain slope. It's going to avoid intersections that don't have pedestrian ramps or curb cuts, and then provide detailed directions, kind of similar to any other trip planning platform. So again, similar to the Georgia project, there are kind of benefits or challenges to these approaches. The main benefit to the Access Map platform is it provides more visibility and direct control by users into their routing parameters. But users may not understand the meaning of those. So how exactly do you interpret the difference between a 4% slope or a 6% slope isn't something that the average traveler would necessarily understand. And similar to the Georgia project, there's a really heavy need for data collection and maintenance so that all of these routing considerations are possible, especially for kind of all the micro mapping of sidewalks. It's one thing to collect that data once to begin with, but then how do you maintain that data when there aren't a lot of other use cases yet outside of that, outside of this platform for maintaining that level of granularity in sidewalk, as part of sidewalk inventories. So using those two examples, I mostly wanted to open this up to a bit of a discussion about how your organizations are thinking about accessibility. Are you just focusing primarily on wheelchair accessible routing? Are you considering other factors? How do users define their profiles? Are they predefined, or is there more granular control? I'd be interested to hear.
Okay, so for your first example, you have mentioned 18 profiles. Is the backend based on OpenTrip Planner?
Yes.
So does it mean that if you have 18 profiles, does it mean that you will have run multiple OpenTrip Planner instances, each with a different profile? Because like when you route with OpenTrip Planner, mm-hmm. and then you need to process the different tag differently, so you need to use a different tag mapper for that.
I'm going to defer to my colleague Ben, who is one of the developers on that project, who can probably explain how our backend works a little bit better.
Yes, so the short answer is it's only one instance of OpenTrip Planner. Yes. We forked the code for that particular project a little bit so that we include that concept of mobility profile that Julian just explained. And then also, I should explain this, we get to the impedance data for each of the ways in OSM from that system that Georgia Tech has developed. So for each OSM wear ID, there is an impedance data for each of the profiles that were mentioned. So for example, on the sidewalk, and there's some cracked pavement on there, there are different values. So if you are like a person with no disabilities who doesn't use a mobility aid, then the cracks don't matter to you, and then that means the impedance value would be like, and they use a travel tab for that, so they'll be the same as like if there was nothing. For a person who uses a stroller or wheelchair, then the cracks matter. In that case, they will see that as an obstacle, and so the time that we will get for that is going to be higher. So we use that time. So when the routing request comes, then instead of using instead of assuming a walk mix speed for which is the same for all users, then instead of using that, we sum up the different travel time impedances as the score for that. And in that case, the lower score wins and gets selected for as the ATM.
Okay, so in this case, you have made a patch to the code which can know the impedance value from another source. Is that right?
Correct.
Yep. Okay. So it's a new real-time updater that consumes those values as they would, because in theory they could change in real time. For the pilot project, they're just static. But in theory, in the future, if they were updating that based on real-time conditions, that's something that we could handle.
Okay, so I can touch upon that a little bit on Wednesday.
Are you aware of there is a research project, or was a research project in the Netherlands, which did a study on, especially on surface, some different surfaces, and they used to be as a... they did their for COVID would be, but I think they ran out of money, so they never contributed their findings back to would be. But are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't. No.
That might be something that you take with. I'm not sure. We worked with them for a while, but I'm not sure what the status is and why there is anything to learn from it. But
yeah, because I think one of our next steps, kind of where we want to take this, is in theory it would be great to not require integration with an external system for calculating all of those impedance values. It'd be great if we could just use whatever tags or existing data there is in the OSM network in a given city, and however much detail we get is what we have. So if we have really fine-grained micro-mapping of sidewalks, that's great. That gives us more information. But if all we have is slope and maybe whether there's a curb cut or not, that's still helpful too. But then, yeah, we wouldn't have to integrate with an external system. We wouldn't have to depend on really detailed, labor-intensive local surveys of sidewalks to still give a little bit more custom routing and information.
If you want to send the reference to that study.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think I saw Leonard, did you have a comment?
Yeah, since you asked, I also had a client approach me, or actually for several years we've been talking about this, where they want to implement a very complicated system where they measure the distance between the curb and the entrance to the bus, for example, or the train, and whether the bus supports what they call kneeling, so it can kind of go down to one side. That would be quite a lot of work to implement in OTP, but it would be even more work to collect all the data about curb heights, buses, what buses is used at what trip. And I don't believe, correct me if I'm wrong, neither Netex nor GTFS has the ability to define that data even to that degree that you need. Is that correct? Netex gods?
Sorry, I think all these, like the curb height, the curve, something like that, that can be added as text in OpenStreetMap.
That's true. But what about a bus?
And then for the bus, and the GTFS V code, the GTFS V code data, then they can supply which model of bus. Then do you know if these facilities can be modeled in the real time data?
I've never seen it, so I don't think it's in there. I mean, doesn't mean that it cannot be added, but right now I don't think so.
Sometimes, mostly in North America, on the sidewalks, between the sidewalk and the pavement, there's a thin, narrow band of grass or just mud. And so depending on what's in there, then the transition between the sidewalk and the bus may not be possible, even if the bus
this is not the question, but I think more about the comment. But then I have noticed that in England there's like two different schools when you are dealing with accessibility, and one school is like Leonard mentioned that there's this kind of factual, precise things, the curves, the steeps, and the openings and stuff. And for example, we have this kind of a project going on where we have a map different kind of like a facility equipments in the, for example, the train stations. You have elevators and escalators and whatnot. And then, okay, so this we can mark that there's an accessible way we lift to the platform. So this is like a wheelchair friendly. So then that like factual people start talking that, no, we cannot say 100% that is right, because we haven't measured the like the opening of the lift with a standardized wheelchair. So we haven't compared these, that is this opening like a standard? So, and someone else needs to make this kind of a, like a professional note that is that elevator to that platform accessible or not? Mm-hmm. And then we have like a practical side of things. We just mark to the data what kind of equipment that individual platform or way or the terminal as a whole has. This is like a more like flexible way to going forward to provide some accessibility information. But if we are going to the factual side, to like try to map everything, I think at least for the Finnish perspective, I think we don't have enough money to do that.
And we've seen the same thing.
And then we don't have like accessibility.
Yep. With the agencies that we work with in the U.S., it's a very similar issue where it's either all or nothing. It's you have to have perfect information, or we aren't going to provide anything.
If the perfect information is needed, then it's no use to start at all.
And to add to that, so the Finnish reality is we have winter, which might last long, and the fall of snow destroys any accessibility whatsoever.
Yep.
So the reality, which may be changing on an hourly basis, in terms of accessibility, is something that you can't possibly have 100% real time information.
Yep.
At those times.
And I think that's at least through this program and these projects, the direction we're trying to take things more towards is how can we give users more information so that they can make their own decisions about whether something's accessible or not, rather than try to make that determination. Marcus? Yeah.
I have a question that I've been thinking about quite a lot when it comes to routing for a wheelchair, for instance. Mm-hmm. Because we know that we haven't got perfect data, so you might end up at the bottom of a staircase that we didn't have in our data, and you might need to go really long to avoid it, and you don't get any guidance from our systems because that system thinks you can go where the staircase is. How can you think about things like that to avoid that kind of situation?
Good question. I think we're, apart from comprehensive data collection up front, the next best option is like, how do you respond to those issues? So in this particular app, because it's providing support and guidance for users when they actually take the trip, if they deviate from the route that we give them, they'll get prompted with a quick little survey of, hey, we noticed you're off route. What was the cause of that? Did you take a different route just because you chose to? Was there an obstruction? Was there a closure? That kind of thing. And then on the kind of system administrator side, if we decide to do anything with that information, maybe that's what triggers going out and doing a resurvey of an area or something to focus on that spot in OSM more. We haven't quite figured out how to use that kind of feedback yet.
I'm curious how you model the profile for the visually impaired profile. What do you take into account in this
field? To be honest, that's something that our partners at Georgia Tech did. So we're just consuming that information from them. So within what Bin was saying about we get a data feed of the impedance cost values for different mobility profiles. The decisions for kind of what went into the impedance calculations for each of those profiles was made by the Georgia Tech team based on, they did a kind of review of the research into those different factors. So I couldn't specifically say what was included there. I know things like obstructions and surface roughness were considered, but how exactly it factors in, I'm not sure.
Is there any data about paths for blind people, or there isn't such thing in OpenStreetMap?
Oh, like if there's a raised strip guidance. Just knowing the study area where we're testing this, there definitely aren't any of those, so it's probably not considered. Those aren't outside of, like, within stations, they're relatively common in North America, but outside of buildings, not really at all.
Maybe some street crossings, they have some border texture for that, that's about it. I don't think it's in anyone.
And we're just a minute over, so unless I think that was all the questions, we'll wrap up and move on to the next session.